I extract individual things that Vile says and make them sound alerts that I can redeem on his Twitch streams. Nice. And so I get to trigger sound alerts that are Vile's voice saying stuff like, yeah, I'm into a lot of weird crap. Or people also like to joke about it being Vile's birthday all the time. And he's always like, it's not my birthday. But I did find a recording of him saying right before his actual birthday stream, it is my birthday stream. So I trigger that one every time, especially when people like raid.
Yes.
It's pretty great.
Oh my God.
Okay.
It's myself.
What are Twitch streamers and people like always saying it's their birthday?
It is the solemn job of any Twitch moderator to harass their streamer.
This is extremely important.
It is very, very, very important. With that, I think we're ready to start. So hello and welcome to episode 22 of the Foam News Collective podcast. I'm KT. I'm here with all the co-hosts, JoelKing627, Vile Mods, Grimms Nerfworks. Say what's up, y'all.
Yo.
What up, y'all?
What's the news with all of you? What's the haps? I feel like we haven't checked in as much at the start of the episodes lately. I know Vile has some big stuff that just happened recently.
Yes, actually, we just finished off our huge charity stream we always raise for the Breast Cancer Awareness Month and the BCRF. Mm. We broke $15,000 as a team, actually, for the team. It was $15,184. And our community for my streams, we raised $1,500 of that. So almost 10% was just from our community. So yeah, big thank you to everybody who helped out and contributed to that. Especially like you, KT, you did offer a couple things.
It's so funny because like I was barely able to come to stream this month, but I was like, how can I contribute to this? And I have a bunch of stuff I'm trying to move, and I realized I had some things that were probably of interest to people. And so yeah, I got to ship out. I have a V1 Talon Claw that came somehow from Drax Uvra to ship out, as well as a sleeper 2S Raven with a Proud Papa on it that I need to ship out to one of the lucky winners. Yes. So yeah, congratulations on that, Vile.
Yeah, thank you, everyone.
That's really exciting.
I won a pretty cool mask at it.
Yes, yeah.
It was funny. I joined the stream. I joked that it's like, oh, it would be cool if I won this. I took a couple nasty face shots the other day at a war, and then immediately won it. I was like, oh, that's all of the luck I will ever have right there.
Oh, spent it all in one shot. But hey, it's a pretty cool one. Yeah, it was a really nice face shield that Steam Puke makes.
So we also are extremely lucky to have a special guest this week. With us today is Perry from Out of Darts. Hello, Perry. How is your evening today?
Hello. My evening's pretty good. Been about a couple hours back from actually my commute day. I normally do a lot of editing and social media stuff from home, but I make it at least one day a week. I make it out to OODHQ, so yeah.
Well, yeah. So that was kind of my first thing, because I think that most people who are familiar with Out of Darts have heard your name and like know that you're around, and you've been in like, you appeared in like a video somewhere at some point, right? But you're usually behind the scenes. I mean, we've gotten to meet, but would you explain to the folks at home what your involvement is in Out of Darts, what your actual job description is, and where they can see your hidden hand when they're out there checking out of Darts content?
So my job title as of just over a year ago is media producer. I started out as just a video editor, but after a bit, over 3 years now, started in 2020.
Oh, wow, what a time to start
Yes.
Yeah.
A new position.
We can get to that a bit later, but but as far as my job description, I'll do all the video editing and publishing, as well as I am involved in scheduling social posts, and I'm usually the first one to take a pass at writing the newsletter that goes out once a month, mm-hmm. or we try to do once a month. We're a bit behind in October. But
it happens. It happens.
Yeah. But the main thing that I've been doing a lot recently has been product photography and keeping those photos up to date.
So I mean, you really have a hand in like pretty much everything outward facing that Out of Darts does.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think that's really why I want people in the community to have a better idea of who you are, because, in addition to being a great hobby store, Out of Darts is a great like social media presence. And I think it's interesting to kind of get a sense of like who, other than just Luke, is, you know, kind of like controlling that voice. So I think you play a really important part of in the hobby in that way.
Thank you.
I do want to hear about how you got started at Out of Darts. Was it just like, did you know somebody? Was it just like a job application, or like were you into the hobby first?
Actually, no, I was not into the hobby first. So it's kind of a weird story. So I've basically grown up in the Portland metro area, had never even heard of Out of Darts, but I decided to go to film school at Portland State University, and I stayed on their email listserv for quite a while after I graduated. And when it was summer of 2020, I was still just kind of working a job to pay the bills, but nothing much more than that.
Mm.
And I saw on the listserv, you know, dead of summer, pretty much no one but me was probably looking at that listserv. And Luke had put an ad as kind of a classifieds on this weekly newsletter that usually goes out for the film department, asking about a videographer and editor as an internship style position for a time. And so I put my hat in the ring. We had done our interview over Zoom, because times being what they were.
Yep.
And we did our first video as a trial, and gosh, that was the review
was
of the what Mega Moto Strike.
Oh.
So just to show you, the first flavor of the hobby that I got a part of was plastic plastic trigger springs and four D cell batteries. But
that's certainly a way to start.
Yeah,
that is one way to start for sure.
But the more that I edited, the more I got involved, I grew an interest a lot in just the design aspect, but also, even though it was the middle of the pandemic, I could still tell that there was a bit of a community behind this, and it wasn't just one channel doing this. And so I just kind of grew from there. I've definitely grown as an editor. I cringe at my earlier work, but
don't we all?
Yeah. The Game Face Prime was my second video. I think my fifth video was the first one we were talking about. The Little Rocket that had come out that fall, and that was for a while. That was my biggest video ever as far as editing time went into it, because all of my projects in college were rather small, 5-minute short films kind of things. For
so when you started editing out of darts videos, to what degree were you sort of like locked into how Luke had been doing the videos previously? Because was it just Luke doing them before you joined it, or did he have another person editing before you?
It was just Luke.
Yeah, because I know he has a history, obviously, in video production.
And, yeah.
So were you the first person that he hired to not be him editing the videos?
For editing videos, yeah. There was one person before me, not necessarily before me, but one of my coworkers, Ashley. She sometimes helped by hitting record on the camera, and she was the one that did a lot of the product photography for a while. Mm. And so she did a lot when it came to a lot of that kind of stuff, but she never delved into the editing. That was always his job. And as the business kept picking up, and the Nexus Pro had been released, and there were a couple of other things, and he was like, you know, maybe I should get myself an editor. And
yeah,
here I am.
Yeah. So now also you are in the hobby, right? Like you go to events and you get to play and have your own gear and stuff. How do you kind of get to keep the hobby separate from your job at all? Or is that all kind of tied together for you? Like, do you get to enjoy it on your own terms as well?
I think it's kind of a yes and no, a little bit of both. A lot of the stuff I learn is through my job, and I'm afraid I really have kind of neglected the modding side of things. I have a Mark III, and I've got a soldering iron, and I just haven't gotten around to actually fixing that thing up the way I want it. But I do go to games for fun. And, you know, while I did go to Maryland Mayhem and Ragnaroktoberfest, and it was comped by Out of Darts, it was still, I was there to enjoy myself, not just have a camera strapped to me while playing HVZ or whatever. And so it's a little hard to separate it at times because it's my job, and I'm the one that has to make sure that the camera's rolling, the GoPro's rolling at the beginning of a game. But I try and do a few things here and there that aren't on the clock.
Do you ever find that, because I think about this a lot when I go to events, because I'm a content creator. I want to make sure that I get my footage. I feel like when I know that I'm going to be recording, it'll often change the gear selections that I make, because I feel like I need to be running low effort gear. Like the more I have to refill mags, the more I have to like check on lipos, and the more I have to like do tuning stuff, the less likely I am to also manage. And plus, I'm a parent, right? I have a kid with me a lot of the time who's also playing, and I have to worry about their gear, make sure that's all going. Do you ever find that like the fact that you're working at the same time? And I mean, also, I guess you have access to a lot of stuff because you're in the Out of Darts ecosystem. But like, does that ever affect what you decide to like use at a game, or are you often like trying stuff out that like the store is trying to figure out, or do you have like your own preferred stuff?
I usually bring my own loadout. At least to local games. However, it ends up I may use one of my blasters for one round, maybe. Mm. But oftentimes we need this one shot of gameplay for this review, or we're doing testing on this scar or something. And yeah. So I end up doing
a lot.
You're
sort of obligated to use specific things to get the footage that you need.
Yeah, there's only a limited number of games, rounds during the day or whatever. And so having that time to do one of the blasters for the content, that ends up being a bit of the priority, unless there's a round that demands it. Like if there's a pistols only round, well, I'm probably not going to field the Diana so Diana I do not own yet. But I may field the Diana, but I probably wouldn't field my Mark 2.0 or something that's on part of my loadout. Or it's usually just kind of a balancing game of whatever game we're playing calls for.
Right. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. All those sort of weird balancing acts that we have to do. Well, I hope that gives folks sort of an initial input. We're going to get to talk more about, and I'm sure we'll sort of weave that into our discussions, because as always, we will be discussing the news, and we're going to chat about some stories that didn't make the show, as we always do. I want to talk a little bit about higher-end boutique blasters, which seems to kind of increasingly be a thing in the hobby, with a few things that came out this episode. We have some questions from our Ko-Fi supporters for Perry, which we'll go through. We're going to play What's That Blaster? It's Jolt's week to pick after last week's solidification of the World Foam Alliance in the guest score, with Captain Xavier getting a perfect 4. we're going to talk a little bit about the Hasbro quarterly earnings report for Q3, which was news that we sort of found near publication, which we'll talk about it. And then we'll have our ending question, as always. But first things first, we've got those stories that didn't make the show. And one of them is actually going to be related to our closing question. The only reason we didn't cover this was it was given to us too late. And I wasn't watching the Maryland Foam Alliance thing and didn't realize that they had their Battle of Endor coming up. And Battle of Endor, I mean, it's kind of on the fence as to whether it's something we cover or not, because it is sort of like a larger event. It's definitely like a big enough event that if you're regional, I think you'd drive to it. Like, I definitely wanted to drive to it, but I'm going to be busy helping friends move this weekend and just can't go. But the other thing is, it should have been in the last episode, because if you're listening to this podcast on release day, it was yesterday. So you missed it.
yeah.
But for the episode itself, you know, if you find out, if you happen to live like maybe a state off of Maryland, and you were to find out about it on Friday, it might make sense to go. But it's a really cool like event in the woods. They do it once a year. But yeah, my question at the end of the podcast will be related to that. So we'll talk about it more then. We also did not cover the Magnesium, which is a bullpup mod of the Zinc. And the only reason we didn't is I'm in touch with the creator, and we are waiting until he's ready to release the files. So if you're curious about the concept of a bullpup Zinc, you should go check it out. It's called the Magnesium. There's a post about it on Reddit. And enjoy. But we will be covering it when the files come out. And the last thing actually is relevant to our guest. The Sweetheart Storm will be on Out of Darts at some point, but thankfully we were able to reach out directly to Perry, who confirmed they just don't know when yet. So we're going to wait until it's actually available, and then we'll cover it. But that will be the thing that's special about that. This is a blaster that has existed for a while, but has not been natively available in the US, I believe.
There's like been a single importer you could get it through, and a lot of people don't order through them very often. So it was kind of just,
So Out of Darts, having it sort of marks a wider availability.
Exactly.
And the fact that it's like a higher end AEB, and that's just something
from
that's
my
not...
understanding, it's the most popular one from what I've seen online.
And this ties into our first other topic too, because I feel like recently we covered the exit of Explorer from the hobby, a creator of high-end, machined, very like bespoke blasters. One of the first people to do machined parts, really like craftsman-y sort of stuff before 3D printing was super common, and continued to make these machined parts and machined blasters up until he decided to move on in his life. But I feel like we're starting to see more offerings that are closer to that caliber. And specifically this episode I'm thinking about, I mean, the Sweetheart Storm, I think, qualifies in that way. And we're also seeing... so many people have been asking about this thing nonstop, and finally it exists. The Ranger Heavy Mega XL blaster, which is based on the XL, the Mega version, which was a Mega Mag Fed one, and this is like Mega XL bolt action breech loaded sniper thing, and it's every one of them, they're 3D printed primarily, but every one of them is like handmade to your exact specifications, and it costs multiple hundreds of dollars. And then at the same time, Monkey Mods put out a new version of their Firefly, which is a collaboration with Rifling Swin. Rifling Swin has made these kits for a while, and now Monkey Mods is selling it fully assembled that way. And again, multi-hundreds of dollars, but it's like probably the top of the line version of the Firefly that you could possibly make. So what I'm kind of wondering is like, is this sort of a new era in some ways for like, is this sort of a new step in our modding community? Cause you know, a lot of this stuff,
the evolution. It's the
evolution. I'd almost argue no. And I'll get into that as a perspective, someone who's been in the hobby for a hot minute, but
I was just going to say, it's the evolution, because
COVID, like a change than something new, but so I'm more in line with Vile, definitely.
I was just going to say that it's more of like, you know, back in the old days, and I know Grimms, you've been around for quite a while in the hobby, you know, a lot of the stuff was like hardware based, 3D printing was kind of still new. You didn't really see it as often. Sometimes, you know, so the modding side of it was more primitive. And
there
were
a couple examples of boutique back there.
I mean, even with like, you know, Orange Mod Works having like some of the first ones for like metal triggers and hammers and stuff like this, you know, there was a few like small shops that were doing it. But what's interesting, at least from what I've noticed and when I got in, you know, 3D printing was becoming a little bit more popular. And then when you really look at the COVID like lockdowns, and all of a sudden people had a lot of time on their hands, 3D printing and 3D printed blasters, because, you know, we had the Caliburns and we had some Talon Claws and some things like that, which kind of helped to pave the way. And then all of a sudden there was this absolute explosion of people who had all this time on their hands to really dedicate to kind of coming up with a lot of unique designs and 3D printing. And then machining started to become more commonplace. It wasn't just, oh, go and get yourself some aluminum bars from X, you know, whatever hobby hardware store. It started to become more and more, you know, again, sort of the evolution of it, like, oh, we should get machined parts. Oh, now we have SLS printed parts from people in the hobby. Oh my god. Oh, we have, you know, actually I think SFI has them, the the catches for like a Lynx that has a metal ring put into it and
stuff like that.
You know,
RoboMan makes straight metal ones.
Yeah,
they also have like SLS nylon stuff for all sorts of different stuff.
And we've had this sort of evolution, and it just kind of pushed. It kind of kept pushing it.
It's definitely like a step up from what we used to have in the past. The closest comparison to what I would have said in the past. So basically, what I'm getting at is boutique stuff isn't necessarily new; just the form it's taken is new. Had you have been talking like 2015 hobby, that stuff would have been more like you had your homemade craftsmen that were really good at what they did and knew how to like get the wood really nice. Like you had people like Nerfomania who were the top of their craft. You had integration work you'd commission through people, through a variety of individuals, like people like you could get commission work done by like Bobo, Drac, Coop, or someone else that you knew that did really good work at the time if you liked their style of work. The biggest example of that, when I think of boutique work, was Tom from Foam Data Services. He's still considered like the standard for good paint jobs. He had a background in automotive paint, and from my understanding, his work was not cheap, and he would do everything up to your custom specifications. And there used to be a website, if I recall correctly, but like there were only so many people who got his work. Like I know the last commission work I can remember him taking on was Bobo did his battery over pusher rapid strike back in like 2020, and he got it painted up in like 2019 from him.
Well, because, like, okay, so that era that you're talking about, you know, people were really, there were very few.
Very few.
In the mod spotlight this time, we just had this recon that has an early orange ModWorks kit, right?
The first one, actually, yeah.
Yeah, well, looking at the internals picture, it looks like it's, like, cast metal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right? It's not machined metal.
Machined metal back then was, or other forms of metal, was rare. The only example I can remember being around back then was called Remedy Metal. Remedy Metal.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yep.
Those are like sought after kits because they were open for literally a singular year with long shot kits before they went belly up.
So we started in this era where if you wanted to build something, you literally had to build it from the ground up. And then we started to have like the first kits. Now we have stores like Out of Darts that carry a wide variety of these parts that have, you know, sort of come up like based on stuff the hobby was doing, or we have, you know, Orange ModWorks and Worker who have come up with all these kits that are based on existing blasters. So I guess like is being able to buy something either as a kit or as a, it seems like in a lot of these cases, just as fully built blasters that are clearly inspired and built off of the knowledge made in the hobby, that's just like totally top of the line. Is that an evolution from this phase of like you can, you know, because mods initially you had to do everything yourself. Then it was you can buy a kit, you can follow instructions, and then you can make the artistic decisions on top of that. And now is buying a fully built boutique blaster or like the full parts kit to build it like to the maximum stage, is that sort of the new step in that process? I don't know if you're like seeing a change like that, Perry, on like the business side, or if this is still sort of like a unique thing to specific builders.
I don't know too much about the early days, as it were, but I do see that there's kind of this opening that for much more custom and personal projects, getting a much more of the spotlight, because you've got in the last 3 years alone, you've got the Nexus Pro and Max Striker and the Game Face Tryon, and Worker stepped it up with the Harrier and now the Seagull, and has been really raising the bar as far as a stock blaster can be. It's like, do we even call them stock blasters because they don't fit in that stock category of performance, but you can still get them out on a shelf, even if it's by ordering online. And so I think that does open up the opportunity that instead of people spending their hours customizing a long shot and the OG long shot and decking it out with all these mod parts and making it custom via looks and everything, they're spending more of that time because they can get a similarly functional blaster right off the shelf now. They'll spend their time going for more, as you say, boutique blasters that fill a certain niche that they haven't seen in a while or are even more glammed up. I do think that, as you say, is kind of an evolution. It's just the hobby has been moving in this trajectory, and the higher end stuff, as it were, is just moving in parallel, just a little bit higher than where the floor is as far as,
well, and I feel like I really appreciate that it feels like an equalizing force, that, you know, at a certain point pre like Nexus Pro, I guess, if you wanted to compete or play at a level in that sort of FPS range, you had to know how to modify and customize things. And I would always encourage people to build on that knowledge, but it can be exciting to be able to kind of get your hands on the gear first and just be able to play and sort of understand what that experience is like. And then as you get more specific about what you want, be able to still be able to just buy, you know, be able to build what you want. But now, yeah, you can just sort of buy your way into that FPS range and have that play experience. And I think that's sort of like equalizing, because it also doesn't devalue the work that modders do, clearly. Like, there's a lot of emphasis and excitement is put on building custom things and modifying and like the art of that side. And I mean, we certainly try to highlight that.
Actually, I
as
could
much as anything
say
else
something
on
that. And it kind of can go into the the evolution of this. The one thing I've noticed being in this hobby is a lot of those who started out early on, who kind of had to learn the hard way and had to use hardware parts or eventually work up into mod kits, and then later on got into 3D printing. We've seen it, and we've even had a guest on who, you know, has actually gotten from being a teenager or a kid or whatever who was in this hobby, and they've later become designers, machinists, engineers, and so on. And if you're really looking at that, the skills that they learned from this has now translated into us getting these really crazy blasters. I mean, we see, you know, all these things, like obviously Tinkershot. We've seen the stuff that Eli Wu does with Out of Darts. We see, you know, Silly Butts working on that as well. Like, you see a lot of creators who started out being modders, doing the simple tinkering and learning those skill sets, are now becoming the designers.
I think RoboMan was like literally a kid when this started, and they joined way back before even me, back in the old days. And now they run the machine shop for stuff in the hobby.
Exactly.
If you want to get stuff done.
That's what I mean about the evolution, is it's not just necessarily the evolution of that. It's the evolution of the people who have been in this hobby and who have contributed to this hobby over the years, because every single one of us is building off those that were in it prior. And we're just kind of moving all of this forward, whether, again, if they went on to be engineers, designers, you know, myself as well, being a CAD designer, like all of us are now coming, either being new or eventually finding ourselves in those jobs. And it's just helping to benefit the hobby as a whole. And we're asking more of stuff. And, you know, because obviously hardware blasters are cool and fun, but, you know, something breaks or cracks, you know, people used to do acrylics. It could, you know, 3D printed blasters that blow up, or they didn't have
homemade. It was not abnormal for somebody's homemade to explode in their hands at a war. Yeah, and it was just exactly. Like you expected, maybe it got you a shot off and like lasted you the war. Maybe it blew up or something. Yeah. And it was like, all right, yeah, that's fine. I'll just build another. Nowadays, it's like you buy that Lynx and you expect it to work 100% of the time. If it blew up, I'm pretty yeah, sure we'd have a pretty big problem.
I mean, Luke is, you know, I've been in the hobby for now over three years, but you know, he's been in the hobby for longer, but still not too much longer that he, you know, his first time ever, firing a homemade was, SENC war that he went when he visited Drac.
Oh yeah,
a couple years
back. Yeah, there was a video on that, right?
And yeah, we did a video on it, and there was a pump snap, and it did quite literally just fall apart in his hands, and have to reassemble it as someone was trying to fire. Yep. Also, fun fact: trees are not that wide in Georgia compared to the Pacific Northwest, where they're actually valid cover in games when you're at a park war. They just and so it was a not only was the blaster falling apart, but then he had this issue with cover, and then I get to kind of live vicariously through the GoPro footage, so that's always fun.
It's always interesting seeing how different clubs work because of the different terrain, and so that leads into how they play. Like, yes, one of the things I know is from a lot of SCNC players, they're a lot more of duck dodge, kind of move while you're firing type of thing, where it's like some other clubs it might be like a more move up to cover, hold this position type of thing.
Yeah, makes sense. Mm-hmm. Well, so I think to some, like, we do agree that this is a step in evolution.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a step in evolution. I guess for the sure. point I was trying to make is the boutique market isn't new; it's just getting better, essentially, in different yes. ways.
That makes sense to me. Well, and it's and like I was saying, it's to some degree like shelf available.
Exactly,
part of that is the rise of online marketplaces and stores willing to partner with creators and things like that. But the fact that you can just go online and, like, if you have the money, you can just buy a Mega XL blaster that shoots at 150 FPS or an all-machined, like, pre-order an all-machined blaster, I think, is a great sign for the hobby. Even if that's not for every single person, you know, there are still options. You can still buy an X-Shot Long Shot for $30. So, like, mm-hmm. and you can still compete against someone who spent $350 on their blaster. We should move on to something that we do with our Ko-Fi supporters. If you want to ask questions of our podcast guests and of us, as well as some other fun perks, this isn't even announced on the thing, but I drop an unedited blooper reel in the supporter chat every episode. I don't promise that because someday there may just not be enough material, but like generally I do. But one of the things you get to do is ask our podcast guests questions, and we have a few such questions here. So if you want to do that, please check out our Ko-Fi. It's linked down below whatever it is that you're listening to this on. And for $5 a month, you get all of those perks and more-ish. but for right now, Perry, if you're down to answer a few questions, which are certainly questions. Our supporter Ghost asks, what advice would you have for someone looking to get into 3D printing as a business? As someone who, I know that that's not the core part of what you do, but like you see the backside of what's going on at Out of Darts all the time. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have a few thoughts. I, generally speaking, it's almost the same advice that I have if someone is trying to start a YouTube channel or whatever, is try and, you know, find your niche, because there are so many different 3D printing businesses out there. Etsy is full of them. People are creating shops like Out of Darts, and it's really easy to get lost in a sea of other 3D printing shops, and being able to find a niche that really jumps out, that it's like a functional, or even if it's a cosmetic piece, just have something as a product that someone wants, and by happenstance it's 3D printed. Mm. That's kind of the goal. Like, my wife and I have a crested gecko, and in the enclosure we've got a couple of little hides for the crested gecko to hide in. And I think the shop is called Strudies or something. Hashtag not sponsored. But they found their niche in whatever printers they have. I don't even know what printers they sell their stuff with, but they print a bunch of these hides. They're essentially, VOS mode. They can just pump them out because every printer has a VOS mode for speed, and all it needs to do is hide a little, what's that, a 4-inch little gecko that clings to the walls.
Yeah.
And they've made their business that way, and we've made our business with mod parts, right, and flywheel cages and whatnot. And so I think probably the premier advice is to find your niche, because that is where you can find...
That makes sense.
Find where you can get a foothold.
That makes a lot of sense. I have to admit, when you said crested gecko, I was like, well, I'm not familiar with that variant of the gecko. Oh, the lizard. Oh.
It's funny, because I actually used to see for a long time in like a lot of the Discords people complaining of the rise of the Etsy 3D print shop, because it was like, oh, some guy gets a 3D printer for 5 minutes and suddenly thinks they're going to be the next all-in-one store or stuff like that. But so finding your niche is definitely a good advice. I mean, hell, I remember my buddy Bobo was looking into selling Nerf 3D print stuff at one point, and then oddly enough, he found his niche as selling... What was it like? I think it was like 3D printed microphone like connection adapters or something like that.
Oh, that's
because
so funny.
He could print at a better print quality and for cheaper than the competitors, because the standards of dialing in your printer in the Nerf hobby is just the norm.
Something like that, you don't need as high of
he may as well type of thing. Since he puts a lot of emphasis on the photography, it means he can take nice photos of the nicer looking ones, and it's also cheaper. And it's kind of fed his coffee, or funded his coffee drinking at this point, if I remember correctly.
Next up, we have a question from Teacup Story. Are we just saying who Teacup Story is at this point?
I guess so.
All right, yeah, Teacup Story is Vile's wife.
Direct line of question. I think she has the... She has the highest possible tier of Ko-Fi support, and by that I mean she literally married one of the hosts. Does that count?
Okay, exactly.
I will say, as a disclaimer, these are quite literal questions that Teacup came up with herself. I will tell her a little bit about the guest. I'll be like, well, this is what they do, or this is something I know about him. And then she just makes these questions. So I have
This is a really good one. I love this. Teacup's question is, what is the best use of 3D printing you have seen for cosplay? Or is there any cosplay or Halloween costume you aspire to make using 3D printed materials?
Hmm. Okay. I'm afraid I've not delved too far deep into to cosplay. I do watch a few cosplayer TikToks, but mostly they're sewing based.
Right.
However, one of the things that I saw think it was Filament Stories. They're a 3D printing creator, and they had figured out I'm not sure, they're probably not the first to figure it out, but they were one of the first to really have a success promoting the idea of just pinning down mesh onto your build plate, and that way you could print scales.
Oh, that's from Shory Designs, actually. I've met him. He was the first one who actually started that, and he's given away those files for free.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that a lot of other creators have started using his designs, but yeah, it's a really cool thing of making scales. And like, yeah, he does a lot of cool stuff with that.
And the brilliant thing about mesh is, I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with cosplay or have cosplayed yourself. I haven't yet, but I do know that it is a very sweaty hobby.
To have
mesh as the underlying fabric, yes, they'll probably be wearing something underneath the mesh, of course, but like, it will cut down on the number of layers. Before I was even in this hobby, I was still into hobbyist YouTubes, and so Adam Savage's Tested and whatnot, and I would watch some of his Adam Incognito, and he would go out into San Diego Comic-Con and then peel himself out of his costume after being on the floor for, 3 hours and just completely drenched. And every year he had like a brilliant idea of using fans or a vest that was soaked in water that he froze overnight to try and keep himself cool and from sweating completely. But nothing has stopped him from completely coming out and just like, oh, that's a relief, So having mesh is probably one of the best designed decisions for something like that with scales.
It's a really cool interaction of materials. For our last question today, Iron Gopher asks, does being a platypus detract from your work duties in any way? Would you say there's been any boon to it?
How did I even answer that question? So it's kind of funny because for over half my life, I did not use my middle name, Perry. Mm. As my main name, and so there are some people that know me by my old name, my first name, and so I didn't even put two and two together that my middle name was Perry the Platypus until I was in college, which it's like it just went right over my head, and then I started calling. I was like, you know what? There are too many Johns in this world. Call me Perry. And someone was like, oh, you mean like the platypus? I was like, yes, like the platypus. I love that show growing up.
I still love that show.
For some reason, it did not.
Still love that show. Can't wait for the new season.
I need to steal my parents' Disney Plus, honestly. So, but yeah, I have a funny relationship with the whole Perry the Platypus thing, because I've definitely leaned into it as the years progressed, but it was not my primary identity until very recently.
Yeah. is that something that, 'cause I mean, like, your logo is like Nerf darts and the colored platypus skull. Is that something that came out of your involvement in the hobby and at work, or is it something that was sort of already, that just sort of developed into that after?
I mean, it's a bit of both. Again, I especially with the masks, wearing masks and going to a Starbucks or something, and they, oh, can I get your name? And Perry? Oh, Harry? Carrie? Larry? Like, anything ending in re. And so I started saying Perry like the platypus, and people were like, oh, and it helped matters. Mm. So, but at the same time, as I was leaning into this, my now wife, we were just dating at that point, but we decided to move in together, and we got, we had some friends that were, going to be roommates, and one of them is an absolutely amazing artist, and, I commissioned them to make that design. I was just like, I just want something that I can make stickers and patches with. Yeah. And I let them be with it. And I don't think I even told them about, you know, I wanted it to be Perry the Platypus, or that I wanted, you know, it to be kind of skull and crossbonesy, but cross darts. But they came back in like 2 weeks with a rough design that was about 95% of the way to what you see in front of you. And I love it. That's so great.
I love that. Cool. Well, thank you for being game for that conversation and for answering all those questions. And speaking of games, it's time for us to play our game that we play every episode. What's That Blaster? Where one member of the team picks a blaster, an official Nerf blaster from sometime in the history of the company, and reads the official Nerf description of the blaster for the rest of the podcast. And everyone has an opportunity to collectively guess what the blaster is. If we can come up with the correct answer right off the bat, we get 4 points each. We can, however, collectively use up to 3 lifelines. Every lifeline we use loses us a point, but gets us a piece of information. It could either be the original release year of the blaster, the original retail price of the blaster, or the original stock capacity of the blaster as advertised. Currently, the scores stand at last episode, I should say, Vile picked, and with Captain Xavier, with a real team effort, actually. Captain Xavier was here, and everyone contributed, and we figured out the answer without any lifelines, earning 4 points, putting me at 28, Violet 25, Jolt at 37, Grimms at 34, and our guest board includes points for Not Enough Nerf, Dart Sweep, Nate, American Foam, and Captain Xavier. This week it is Jolt's turn to pick, and Jolt, I'm sure, has some devilishly difficult thing for us to try to guess.
This one should be pretty easy.
Okay. All right, well, is everybody ready?
Yes. Ready. I would like to surpass Jolt by 1 point, if possible. So let's try and go for the 4.
If we get it without any lifelines, Grimms will be in the lead by 1 point.
I'll admit that this is probably not going to be my strong suit. I will be lucky if I get any points.
If we get it, you just get points. So
this is a team effort.
It's a team effort. Yeah.
We score as a team.
I missed that bit.
Honestly, like, it probably would have made more sense if we all started with like 50 points, and if everyone guesses it, you just lose points if it was yours to pick. Like, that probably would have made more sense, but oh well. We're this far in now.
We've committed to it too much.
Yeah, exactly. Jolt, hit us.
Okay. Unleash, series name, power with a lightning strike of dart type. This dart-firing bow from Nerf features powerful bow action. Load a dart type into the front of the bow, pull the string back, and release the string to send the dart screaming through the air up to 85 feet, 26 meters. Store as many as storage capacity, ammo type on the blaster to reload rapidly during battle.
Mega Thunderbow?
Yeah, Thunderbow is just immediately what my brain goes to.
Okay, so screaming darts. So,
yeah, so
it's a whistling dart,
mega.
which is, like, well, yeah, because Ultra did not have a bow.
Mm-hmm, there was no Ultra bow.
And by the time we had
that,
like Rebel and Zombie Strike bows, we didn't have whistling darts.
Make Ultra bow.
Wasn't there a there? Now that I think about it as well, there was also just the lightning bow. The lightning bow only held one and didn't have on dart storage. It mentions multiple darts, so that just means the
does the Mega Thunder bow have on dart storage?
Thunderbow has four dart or five darts total in an in like but, an inline barrel system. So it would,
yeah,
it
but it said storm
as...
on the dart. Oh no! What was the small one? There was a small mega
lightning
bow.
Is that the lightning bow? So you said that the lightning one doesn't.
Oh wait, yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. The small one.
And the small one had dart storage, though, didn't it?
It does have dart storage.
Oh, it does. I forgot about that. Okay.
Yeah,
what is
it called, though? What is it called,
That's the lightning bow.
That's the lightning, because the other one was a thunder bow. The other one's
thunder
a lightning bow.
Thunder bow's the big one, lightning bow's the small one.
Because the language, the opening, can you read the first sentence, Joel?
Yes, I can. Unleash, series name, power with a lightning strike of dart type, darts.
Lightning strike.
Yeah,
which lightning. Could be either, but like
lightning bow would make sense.
I guess Joel, just read the whole thing the rest of it one more time.
This dart firing bow from Nerf features powerful bow action. Load A, dart type, dart into the front of the bow. Pull the string back and release the string to send the dart screaming through the air up to 85 feet, 26 meters. Store as many as storage capacity, dart type on the blaster to reload rapidly during battle.
The other thing I'd also
Load a dart. Yeah.
The other thing I'd also say is Mega's the only one that really commonly, other than Ultra, that commonly puts the series name as dart type in front of it. With Elite Darts, it's just darts. You know, they don't say Elite darts. It's just darts.
Right.
With Mega darts, it's... Whereas, and then it's also the screaming, and that's just Mega.
Okay.
So it's probably
lightning. We're sure about the name.
Yeah, I'm certain it's the lightning bow.
Okay, I think that's what it is. Are we going with it? Are we just going to run with it? I think we should just run with it.
I'm just going all out. Run with it.
I'd say go with lightning bow.
That's it, Joel.
You are lightning correct. Bow. It is in fact the lightning bow. Told you I gave you an easy one.
Yeah, we did it.
Yeah,
that was a pretty easy one. But I'm here for it.
I've torn apart so many Thunderbows at this point. I was like, they don't have on dart storage. I was like, there's no way. I was like, there's another one. No, the other one's the only one that has it. Ah!
Okay, so that puts me at 32. Everybody's over 30 except for Vile now.
I'm just,
Vile at 29 and Grimms at 38, putting Grimms one over Jolt.
Congratulations.
And we also get to add Perry. We also get to add Perry to the board, even though you didn't have anything to say, but you get points anyway.
Honestly, I was hanging myself up on the word unleash, and I was like, oh gosh, like what blaster series is unleashed? And it was a complete red herring. So
yep.
No,
there's always
a
red herring.
That was kind of my first line of thought until I heard whistle and scream and other stuff. And I was like, Mega.
Well, so here's the thing. Currently, every World Foam Alliance associated person who's come on the podcast, which is Dart Sweep, Nate, and Captain Xavier, have all gotten 4 points. And so you have, like, if we've talked about potentially having Luke on at some point, if Luke can come on and get 4 points,
I just realized
you
technically
will
no,
out of darts
because...
will also have a perfect record. Moving on. Congratulations, Grimms, on being in the lead now.
Hooray.
But who is not in the lead this year is Hasbro, who just released their Q3 quarterly earnings report. And it's not great. And I mean, this is just sort of like big corporation stuff, right? Like they go up and down and all this stuff, but they were already projecting a dip in their yearly earnings of like 3-6% over prior year. And they're now expecting it to be like twice that, more than twice that. like 13%. And they are, there's actually a conversation going on in the Discord like this right now, where Teku66 on our Discord says, "I'm continually confused why they don't do more cross-branded blasters with their own IP, like Transformers, G.I. Joe, Power Rangers, etc." And, like, you know, they have done a G.I. Joe blaster and a few Transformers blasters, and they're all, at least, like, from the hobby perspective, they're all pretty bad. Like, the Transformer ones are literally, like, repaints of some of the worst blasters that they put out in the last few years.
Not Hasbro unironically shooting themselves in the foot with their own tie-ins.
Well, and it's interesting because we know that a blaster that just has Transformer stuff painted on it, it's not for us. We're not the target audience for that.
Yeah.
But then they also make the Halo Needler, which, like, we enjoy, but we're also not the target audience for that either.
I mean,
but we
I
enjoy it because
am.
It's well done.
I would say that right? They do at least do some good licenses. Like, they did the TMNT Sweet Revenge. That's great. Puts a blaster on the market that everyone mm-hmm. can agree is great.
Yes.
The only thing I would say is that consider the following. Transformers Double Punch. If that thing doesn't give Cybertron weapon vibes, if it was, like, painted off, it was just,
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of good options like that, right? But not to get too far in the weeds on that, because
of course
the thing is, like, Hasbro has had this refocusing on their larger sort of, like, licensing and IP stuff. They're basically, like, their earnings report was pretty much kept afloat by Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering and Baldur's Gate. And, like, we just got Dungeons and Dragons products in the Nerf, like, Nerf tie-ins to Dungeons and Dragons and to the Dungeons and Dragons movie. We also just got one Magic the Gathering tie-in, and it doesn't seem, the hobby's certainly not excited by it. I come to this podcast recording from a card shop where I'm a Pokemon TCG professor, and every Thursday, and Magic the Gathering people are they're, like, unaware of this Magic the Gathering Nerf tie-in. Because it's just not that interesting.
It's your shell strike in red.
With a card, which is, like,
it's a basic card, right?
It's Lightning Bolt is, like, an early Magic card that is a powerful card. Like, it has its cost, and when you play it, it just does 3 damage to a target. And, like, that's a very, like, straightforward sort of, like, powerful effect in game.
So it's like your average Magic missile in 5e, essentially.
Yes. But it's unclear. I don't know enough about, like, Magic's formats to know if this is, like, is this a card that you now can, is, like, playable in game, but you can only get it by buying this Nerf blaster? Because then Magic people who play red might have a reason to buy the blaster, I guess. I don't know enough about that. I don't want to try to speak on that. All I want to say is it seems like they pivoted their whole business around, like, we're going to do all this entertainment stuff, and we're going to do all of this tie-in stuff between our entertainment stuff and our toy divisions. But from our perspective, it seems like they're doing a lot of those things badly and aren't really, and then, like for me, it feels kind of obvious that they're earnings report would be down at this point, just based on the kinds of products that I've seen and, like, the lack of hype that I see around those products.
I was going to say, I would wonder almost if it wouldn't have to do with just such a consistent and, like, solidified history of, like, Hasbro's brands doing well without much intervention or effort, essentially, on their part in that regard. It was just kind of, they can release something, and as long as it's not dog water, it will do well, kind of type of thing. So I'm wondering if it's almost like a mentality type of thing. So that's why the items haven't been as nice.
You look at things like, even when things are like dog water, like, I would say the Elite Surge Fire counts as a complete piece of trash product. But I see them all the time in thrift stores. They must have sold well.
Well, then you get weird ones like the tie-in with G.I. Joe. Did anybody remember so that?
I remember that.
Did anybody remember that?
I forgot about it.
Yes. Did anybody remember? Exactly. It's such a, because it's a hyper fire with G.I. Joe logoing
on both sides? Fury Fire, not a Hyper Fire. There's a difference.
Whatever.
It's reverse plunger. It's a Maverick inside.
But either way, they were trying to do these tie-ins, and they're strange. Like, is there, like, what are you doing with G.I. Joe? That's, is there a new cartoon coming out? Do you have a movie coming out? Like, is there something, even in that sense, where is that going?
He was referring to the Hyper Fire.
Hyper Fire.
Not the other one. Fury Fire. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
This just goes to prove his point about forgetting about it.
Right. It's such a forgettable. What are you doing? It's kind of funny
because I would have probably picked one up had it not been both teams on one blaster and it split down the middle. Had I been an option to get the red and black Cobra Command one as a separate fully fledged thing, I probably would have gotten that one.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder why it's
well. Can we just say that like $80 for a Hyper Fire with a 10-round stick bag instead of a drum, when a regular Hyper Fire was half that price? Just saying.
We've also talked about the miss. I think we talked about this last episode, but the Star Trek tie-in.
Yeah, with the Borg.
Everyone wants the Jolt. No one wants the piece of crap rifle.
I'm still almost angry that like they got. It's almost. It's like. I keep seeing, like, as a Lego fan, I keep seeing, like, Mega Bloks get, like, the Pokemon license. And it's like, ugh. Like, I love Pokemon and I love Lego. Why? But I don't want this. You know?
Exactly.
It's the same kind of thing with
the Boomco and Halo thing. And then I got super excited when they took the Halo license. They smashed it out of the park and then they never released more blasters for it. And I was just like, why? The Halo Assault Rifle did so well.
So, yeah, and I mean, we're talking about this, and understandably, we keep pivoting back specifically to our hobby. But I guess what I'm kind of wondering is, like, Nerf hasn't released a product in the last month or longer. I've noticed this as we're editing episodes where it's like, oh, there's nothing Nerf brand to report on. We don't have any new leaks. We don't have
the
any
last
new
thing
releases,
was Strife X, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think Strife. So. So,
yeah,
are they and Perry, maybe you have some input on this because I know you were there for a lot of the Nerf Ball and Strife X stuff. Strife X and Nerf Ball doesn't seem like something that they would be pushing through the holiday season, right? Like that, like they're pushing that as like it almost seems like the existence of that sport is as much like a marketing thing as it is an actual game design. Like, are they expecting to sell a bunch of Strife X's for Christmas? Or, like, I don't know. I don't know what the place of that in their overall strategy is. Or even when we expect to see, like, more sellable product come out of Nerf Ball. I don't see anything else coming out of them. So I don't know. I don't know what they're planning for November, December 2023. Heading into the gift buying season.
Yeah, I really can't speak to Hasbro and Nerf executives. I've not been in on those meetings.
Of course.
No matter what NDA I have signed. But I really don't know because the Strife X videos. We got those out in, what was that, August, mid-August, and then we were just kind of in a holding pattern until the Strife X videos. Not the Strife X, the Nerf Ball videos.
Right.
But I really haven't heard much other than, like, that they are really kind of banking on, since all the other brands, I'm assuming, this is kind of my speculating here, since a lot of the other brands are headed towards this kind of the pro series, the super stock class, that getting in this game and coming out with a rule set and as far as Nerf Ball is kind of their you know, they're trying to get their foot in the door as far as that's concerned. I don't think that they have thought about what that looks like for the holidays. I can't even remember what their last Instagram post was about. They've been doing a couple of throwback posts, like, oh, you remember the Rapid Strike,
I think,
or something.
The last one that I saw was on one of the gel fire things, the shotgun one.
Yeah. Well, and speaking on something that I know all too little about, it seems like they were very much, at least last year and the year before, they were banking on the limited series, and they didn't that collectability would, you know, keep them afloat, and so they came out with these really interesting looking blasters, and some like the Needler, that was pretty cool, and the Mandalorian blaster, we all know where that went. It's hilariously, I was looking it up because of something that I was doing in my free time, and it's still being sold for some reason. A limited edition blaster is still being sold.
I mean, they're right. Still
on retail.
They're still selling the Needler even, and other stuff.
Yeah,
it's interesting because it's like for every good limited blaster, there was a bad one. So it's like you'd get the Mandalorian, then you'd get your MA,
right?
Or you'd get your Needler, and then like the Gjallarhorn, from what I understand, with both Destiny fans and Nerf fans, with it was just a straight smash hit. Like almost every big Destiny YouTuber I watch, since I'm a avid Destiny player when I'm consuming content for it, they have the Gjallarhorn in the background, it or it's in their lap, or doing something with it.
The Bungie is a whole news story. I don't want to.
Oh, that's
that
a whole story. No,
that
was a nightmare for me as a Destiny fan. Week, but like, I don't even want to talk on that. But I'm just.
I don't want to get into that. If you're listening to this podcast, you're hearing about it for the first time. Just Google Bungie layoffs and be prepared to cry. I actually made a spreadsheet about this when we were looking up Nerf Limited stuff for a prior episode. I don't remember what episode this was, but I should update this probably. But the Goosebumps, the AR Goosebumps was the first limited release technically. That was January 27th, 2021 that it was first reported after being promised to be delivered in October of 2020.
And then it turned out to be a huge flop because all the paint just looked disgusting.
It did not look like it was promised. Then the Mandalorian Ambon Phase Pulse Rifle came after that. That turned out to be a huge flop. People were extremely disappointed with it. After that was the Supreme Takedown, technically a limited blaster, but that appeared immediately. I honestly forgot
that existed.
But then we have the Aliens Pulse Rifle, which
that one was cool.
Seems to be like people seem to like that one, and it was delivered.
The only issue
time.
I saw with it was the mag compatibility.
Yeah, but I mean that's already a problem with like the Halo rifle and stuff. It happens.
No, but like no mags would work with it.
Really? Okay, that's
yeah.
This is interesting. Yeah. I was checking the Hasbro Pulse website, and so when you click on the brands to go to the drop down menu for where Nerf Limited would be. They now have it separated into two categories. You have Nerf X Limited and Nerf X Aliens. So the Aliens blaster is still up for sale, and it's gotten its own category now. So
oh,
I'm assuming it's just doing that well that they've just given it its own category on the website.
Huh. That was the one I had heard actually sold out.
Yeah. Going down the list, after that is the Needler, the Gjallarhorn, and then the Boba Fett. I don't yet have on this list the Star Trek one.
And then there's also the there's the Jinx blaster that's yet to release that everyone in the league scene seems to be super hyped about.
I know the Boba Fett thing was kind of a flop. I know Skull had one, and I believe it broke like immediately.
At least with the league, like Jinx Fishbone blaster, I've had like
five people who play League that don't use Nerf blasters asking if these limited things are even any good because they thought about pre-ordering one.
Interesting. What were you saying, Perry?
Oh, I was just about to ask because I didn't remember hearing you say it, but wasn't the those G.I. Joe Hyperfires, those were at least at initial press release were meant to be the Nerf under the Nerf limited line.
I think you're right, and I think it's interesting because they've gone on to do and maybe this is also related to their sort of like failure to build the brand in a way that's sort of unique, I think, to what Nerf does. But you know, we've talked a lot about X-Shot having their skins line, and it feels like Nerf is sort of just copying that in a lot of ways. And like, you know, we really like the TMNT one because we like the blaster that it's based on. But then we have the G.I. Joe one doesn't feel that different from like the Mandalorian one, which you can buy at Walmart and is not good. And it's just a reskin of a prior Star Wars blaster, which is so weird. And yet, the G.I. Joe ones are theoretically limited blasters, which just means you have to order from somewhere different.
Or pre-order from Amazon, because they also started doing that.
There was one other blaster that was good that they did. They did the one that was actually affordable, the $30 Sharp 92. That one was
the
cool.
Sharp 92, which you pre-ordered and then reordered, right? You wound up reordering it, right?
Yeah. Because it like they were starting to ship out people who were ordering like day of release.
Well, so this is the thing, right? When the Sharp 92 came out, we did a closing question, which was about what vintage blaster would you like to see them redo. They haven't done any more. Where are they?
That's such a missed opportunity.
How is this not a line that they're leaning into?
95 crossbow. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
There's so Aerostorm. Many things that they could Come sell on. That would hit. That would hit people's nostalgia bone, and Low yet and at arrow. The same time, they're affordable. You could still buy them for your kids if you want to. Like, it seems like such a no-brainer.
The amount of non-hobbyist parents who might look at that is like, I remember having that as a kid, and yep, they'd go and
exactly.
buy it. I mean,
exactly.
it was the exact same case with the Nerf fencing set. There were a bunch of people like, oh my god, I had this as a kid, I want this.
And then it was terrible.
Exactly.
Seems like... Wasn't there a PulseCon recently or something? And I don't remember hearing anything come out about Nerf Limited. And so I'm curious if they're just kind of silently phasing that bit out. I mean, again, speculating on something that I know almost nothing about. Yeah. I feel like a lot of the Nerf limited line and the collectability was part of a just not even Hasbro, just a cultural wide attention about having collectible functional props mm-hmm. or back in the days of NFTs and that kind of stuff.
Nerf fireable tokens.
And I feel like that has kind of, that the idea of collectibles have kind of faded from the public consciousness. And I'm wondering if what we're sees of just having nothing come out in the last few months as far as Nerf Limited, at least, I feel that that's probably just kind of a reflection of how the trends have been going.
I'm almost wondering if they weren't trying to like recreate the consumerism that you have with like stuff like the Power Rangers Lightning Collection with Power Rangers fans, but with Hasbro stuff or with Nerf stuff, but they didn't realize that they had to actually make the blasters like really good for us to like want to buy it like hotcakes, if that makes any sense. It's interesting because I was looking at the Sharp 92 on the webpage, and I've seen a couple reviews just on like or stuff online that isn't even on the website, and they're complaining about the graphics being different on the box than the Sharp 92, so they take it down 2 stars on their review or whatever. And
the box
like,
looked
Blaster
fine.
Is fine. They're like, Blaster's fine, but it doesn't have the darts exactly in this position, or the graphics and the coloration is slightly different than the original.
What
and then
they
have like a super
well, yeah,
battered box
different.
Of the original. And it's just like, okay.
It looked fine to me. I love the look. And the stickers are super cool. And they sit on my
No, they're not,
because I don't
they're not
stick
even talking about
anything.
The blaster. They're talking about the box.
I know.
Right.
The box looks
yeah,
fine.
I mean, like,
saved the box.
If you're a toy collector, your perspective is somewhat different than ours is as hobbyists.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't necessarily agree with that approach to it, but I get it. You know, they're looking for different things than we are. But I think the real key takeaway here is Nerf feels really lost. And I think a couple years ago, you know, the big complaint was like Elite 2.0, really low quality product, and then Alpha Strike. And then you're like, oh, Elite 2.0 is basically Alpha Strike in a different color. And like, why are they making this really, really cheap product? And so I think people were really down on Nerf for the quality and type and design of their product. And now it feels different. It feel like at the time they were doing this, and like, I'd have to go back and see what their like earnings reports were back then. But it seems like as a business, they were doing fine because they were making all these products that were cheap that appealed to people who might be willing to make off the cuff purchases, but really didn't appeal to us. But they knew what they were doing, right? Like they were making these cheap products and they were selling them by the boatload. And now they feel scrambled. Like they're trying to appeal to so many different audiences simultaneously. They've made the Strife X, which ties back into our conversation at the beginning of the thing, right? Like it's really on par in a lot of ways with the boutique blasters that we're talking about, but you're buying it from a major brand. That's significant, and that's part of that evolution. But they're doing that at the same time that they're trying to do collector series, and they're also trying to sell to parents, and they're also trying to just do everything all at the same time. And it feels like there's, even for a company that size, they can't handle all of it at once. And they're just so scattered, and they're not doing any of those things particularly well.
The only thing that I can think of is, if it weren't for this earnings report, tying into what you were saying about the Strife X, the Nerf ball teaser will be, that teaser that they showed will be a year old as of this weekend.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure. Wow. And so if it weren't for this earnings report, I would be thinking that maybe something is coming,
right?
Maybe this weekend or next weekend, as some sort of big flashy teaser ahead of the holiday season to hype people up and maybe get some kids to add it to their holiday
right.
wish list. But I don't know at this point with how things are, but who knows? But I just wanted to add that little tidbit because
That's a really interesting perspective. How long ago did the Nerf ball game filming thing happen? When was that actually filmed?
So that was filmed a week before I'm assuming you're talking about the game that Luke
yeah,
was a part
correct.
Of. And that was filmed, I believe, a little over a week before published the post saying that, hey, go to the site. They've got the Nerf ball game, the 17 minute video.
Oh, so it was
it's
actually
live.
It was actually not
it.
That long before the video came out. Like they edited it pretty
oh,
quickly.
Oh yeah, I
interesting.
Honestly,
okay.
As an editor, I'm completely impressed with I mean, Hasbro's got the money to
yeah.
to throw at it to have a team just work frantically and get it out within a week.
Yeah.
But from what I know, from Luke and stuff, and how many cameras were out there and the coordination that it took, I am impressed at what they put out in that amount of time.
Interesting.
We're gonna be getting some of the footage for our own little recap video. Yeah. And I feel a bit daunted about going through some of that footage.
Well, it seems like they've leaned some of their effort in somewhere. I guess we'll just have to kind of see where that actually goes. But we're going to have to leave that one, I think, at that and lean into our ending question for today. Taking it back to the Maryland Foam Alliance's Battle of Endor, which is a higher FPS blaster battle set out in the woods. Perry and I got to meet at Maryland Mayhem, which was partially held at the same site, but not. We were on the field, and they're doing this in the trees. It's a really cool setting. A lot of people come. They dress like I see people in like Star Wars costumes, especially like Return of the Jedi stuff. It seems really nice. Of course, hyper is banned, as it should be everywhere. So my question, my roundtable question for everybody, what is your ideal, unique, and unusual Nerf battle setting, particularly one that you haven't heard of actually happening? Because, like, it would be really easy to say, like, a mall, but we know that people are doing them in malls and in the woods, but we know people are doing them in the woods. What is a unique setting that you'd love to have a Nerf event in?
I've been thinking on this one for a hot minute. The thing I'd want to see done, and this ties into me being kind of a big Halo fan, I'd want to see something similar to how Afterworlds has its own like post-apocalyptic style like role-playing setting. Mm-hmm. I'd want to see something like that for Halo, whether it be someone imitating the surface of a Halo ring with like some hilly terrain and other stuff, or maybe like an abandoned base, like UNSC style base type of setting, something like that.
This cave, like, is not a natural formation.
Exactly.
Someone must have built it.
Exactly. Something very on the nose, you know, you're in like a Halo style thing. I'm just too big of a Halo fan to not want something like that.
That would be cool. That would be cool. I'll go ahead. I'm really thinking about an existing space that it would be sort of reinterpreted. You know, I grew up, there was a high school, or I guess it was a middle school next to a high school that I was like a choir that I was in rehearsed at. And they had this like multi-level building where you could see from each floor to all the other floors. And I always wanted to do like a Nerf thing there, even as a preteen.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that really calls out to me, picture it's the mid 90s, and you have begged your parents to take you to Adventure Zone, which was, for those who remember, and there have been plenty of other places. Like, imagine the McDonald's Playland, but it's a whole thing that's just that. And it was tubes and ball pits and climbing and it was like a giant, like super safe jungle gym. I want a Nerf battle there. I want it in there. I want to be allowed to shoot darts in there.
I've been to one of those. We had one up in Branson when I went up there, somewhere like that. Okay.
Yeah, there was one in my hometown, and like at the mall.
Oh, these adventures!
But you couldn't. It's you like couldn't take it.
Like, it's the thing with like the rainbow slides and all that stuff, right?
Precisely. You couldn't take a Nerf blaster there.
It's funny because I remember seeing, I see photos of these places abandoned all the time now in liminal space media.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I see them all the time in liminal space media because they give like really trippy vibes once they've been abandoned for a while.
That is very much what I'm talking about.
It's almost similar to like what I see now out in Kansas is some places will rent out a lake property and they'll build an inflatable aquatic playground type of thing. That would be fun to have a Nerf battle on. You would basically have to be springers only, but like the inflatable arena out on the water. That would be neat.
That would be pretty cool.
Oh,
all right. Anybody else?
I'm going to steal an idea from Chalo, actually. Sorry, I'm doing this. It's mine now. You can't. I don't care.
You have the talking stick.
One of the ideas I would have is, and it's based off of when he had a Halloween at his property, and he was taking the kids around on his golf cart, and they were shooting from the golf cart, and he had like a whole bunch of targets and stuff set up. I'm looking at the same thing of like some kind of vehicle type battles instead. Because, you know, we always see the tanks, right? With like a blaster on it. Like Bray's got one, has made a joke with it and all that stuff. I want vehicle battles basically like that. Whether it's like you're trying to drive through certain areas or you have to be on a vehicle. I mean, it's just sort of like the themed ones from, you know, Disneyland or Universal Studios or whatever, where you're like, you know, shooting on the sides kind of a deal. Like you're almost on that. But I think it would be a lot of fun to have something that's really heavily influenced by that.
It's funny.
Listen,
because
as a cargo biker, I'm with you.
it's funny because in the airsoft scene and paintball scene, you see stuff like that with people with private properties. They'll take modified golf carts or they'll take military surplus. If they're really uppity, they'll take a military deserviced Daimler Ferret from like World War II from the British Army, and they will add balloons or like targets to the outside of it. And
yes,
people
it's
can
Mario
use them.
Kart.
So yes, if the balloons have been popped, it is deactivated essentially.
Yeah,
that's
so
clever.
Somebody who's in on a community, Ratsky. So he does paintballing. He actually has an old, I think it's like a Ford Explorer or something like that, that he's turned into a tank that has a turret and it's for paintball. Mm-hmm. And he has like all this stuff. So yeah, that basically take what they do, but do it to Nerf on a little bit of a smaller scale, just, you know, not that large of a vehicle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that would be a lot of fun.
That sounds sick.
I love vehicle battles. That's why for me, Destruction Derby Nerf battle all day long.
All right. Jolt, Perry.
For me, this would never happen, but as a retail worker, I would love to have a Nerf battle in like an actual grocery store, like think Walmart or something. That would be so much fun. It'd never happen because obvious reasons.
Never say never.
I'll be throwing tomatoes.
Listen, Joel, here's what I'm gonna say. If your store ever goes into a period where it has to like remodel, that's the time to ask.
Martin Mall Ninja shenanigans.
Yeah. And then they just come back to work on it, and it's just like, why is there Nerf darts everywhere?
The produce section is empty, you know? There's no, like, damageable product on the shelves. You know, you just promise that you'll clean up really, really thoroughly. Never say never.
Yeah.
What do you think, Perry?
So
you get to go to battles at your work all the time.
Yes. In fact, we've got a couple of targets up that if we have a blaster on hand and we're feeling a bit bored, we can plink a little bit. So there's like one of those foam heads that shops put hats on and stuff.
Oh, that's fun.
And it's got a couple of dents in it from being shot probably thousands of times at this point.
What's your fantasy location?
Yeah, I digress. I've got a couple. First thing when I looked at outlandish possibilities accepted, I immediately thought of the vomit comet, like the paraboloid plane that you get weightlessness and just trying to do some sort of Nerf game in that.
Oh, okay. No.
That was my first thought.
For anyone who's not familiar with what Perry's talking about, I recommend you check out the music video for OK Go's Upside Down and Inside Out, where they actually filmed the video on it's the plane that like goes up to the edge of the atmosphere and then drops really fast, so you simulate weightlessness. And they actually filmed a music video in it, and they're throwing stuff around the plane. And they do these like dance moves with like two hired dancers who like the dancers strike a pose in midair, and one of the musicians just like spins them. It's really, really fascinating, and I absolutely follow you on that. Go ahead with your other one.
Well, it kind of ties into what Vile Mods was saying. I recently revived my Nintendo Switch because I had let the battery die, and I opened up Mario Kart to find out that that it had updated with in that time, and that the GameCube Peach Cruise map for Mario Kart was now available as a track that you could either race around or do the balloon pop versus. And I was just like, go-kart nerfing with doesn't even have to be balloons. We can just tag people. But like that kind of thing. That was my second thought, was something like on either on a cruise ship or just go-karting in general. But that was my second thought.
No.
after the vomit comment.
I'm here for it. I think nerfing on the go. I think that would be.
You
a
know,
great time. I know
you
that
know
some
what,
people do it.
You know what else would be cool? I just thought about this because I was thinking of games I used to play. One of my favorite maps on Modern Warfare, or not Modern Warfare, sorry, Black. No, yeah, it was Modern Warfare 2. Modern Warfare 2 was a terminal. It was a airport map in COD that you could play on. Airport Nerf Battle, with how big some of those places can be and how cool.
Yeah. Talk about places where you truly never will be able.
Oh yeah. No.
But those would be incredible spaces.
Incredible spaces
for that.
The forbidden
you are
nerf
completely
zone,
right.
But like a man can dream.
Yeah, for real. Okay. Normally when we finish the question, I go like, you heard it from us, but there's no one to say that to, I guess. you heard it from us, Jolt's boss. Sign us up for for a Nerf battle at the grocery store. But yeah, I think that's it. Perry, thank you so much for joining us today. It was really wonderful to have you on to give people a chance to get to know you a little bit better. Where can people, if you want them to, find you, or just plug Out of Darts, whatever makes the most sense?
Well, it kind of makes the most sense. I am on Instagram at J Perry Hune, and maybe changing that because I just got married. But as of now, it is J Perry Hune, H-E-U-N. But you can usually find me lurking or replying to comments at Out of Darts on all the socials, YouTube, etc.
Fabulous. We will, of course, have all that linked down below, whatever it is that you're looking at. And the rest of the hosts, anyone got anything going on you want to plug right now?
Eating hot glue.
Of course.
I'm usually streaming. Got more stuff to still finish up. I have a Stinger Raven I've got to finish. It is a behemoth. Coming
the
in
fundraiser
like,
may be over, but the fun never stops.
Fun never stops, exactly. And if you've listened to this, you probably have missed it.
If you join our Discord, we do post whenever any of us hosts are doing anything. There's a special channel and a paying role for that. So you can find out when Vile is streaming, when I am streaming, when any of us release videos. That all goes there. And beyond that, I think we have casted a pod. Great job, everybody. I really appreciate everybody's efforts. Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Vile, are you going to say good night? You didn't say good night.
Good night.